Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. How are you? I am extremely well. I'm actually on location, so for the month of June, we are not in New York, we're in California, and I'm getting an enormous dose of vitamin D. I keep hearing from so many people how they find out they're low in vitamin D, and if you haven't had your blood checked, you should. Because many of us do have vitamin D, and vitamin D seems to be linked to everything wrong today with people's health. So get out in the sun when you can. Don't stay out too long, like tanning for 8 hours on the beach. But it is important to get it, and I'm getting a great amount of it. And it feels so good. I think it helps with depression, too. Sunshine just makes you feel all sunny. Now, I wanted to mention a few things. First, I wanted to give a big shout out and a big round of applause for everyone at Progressive Radio Network. We've been going through a relocation, moving to a temporary studio, and now a new permanent studio. Everybody's been doing a lot of great work, and I really appreciate everyone on the staff at PRN. Thank you for everything you're doing. Yay! Now, I've missed the last 2 weeks, and I've missed you and doing the show, so this is going to be a great one today. Really looking forward to it. Have you heard today the FDA put out a release, and they're basically taking the steps to remove artificial trans fats in processed foods, and they're saying that based on a thorough review of the scientific evidence, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration today, June 16, 2015, finalized its determination that partially hydrogenated oils, FOS, and the primary dietary source of artificial trans fats in processed foods are not, quote, generally recognized as safe. The acronym for that is GRAS, GRAS. I love that because that's also French for fat, and for use in human food. Food manufacturers will have 3 years to remove partially hydrogenated oils, the acronym FOS, from products. And I love this, but it's taken the FDA a really, really, really long time to do this. You cannot rely on the government to give you the best and most current information in health. They take a really long time to move. Do you know that trans fats or partially hydrogenated oils came on the scene back in 1911 with Crisco? And it's been in the food supply for over 100 years. And now we're learning it's not good for us. And what else are we going to discover that isn't good for us? The NRDC, the National Resource Defense Council, has a petition to ban synthetic flavorings. They've got a list of seven of them that are listed as carcinogens: benzophenone, ethyl acrylate, eugenyl methyl ether, myrcene, pulagone, pyridine, styrene, we see that a lot, and trans-trans-2,4-hexadienyl. Great stuff. We don't need to eat it. I wanted to mention that, you know, people are afraid of chemicals, but what you have to realize is there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals. Our whole bodies are filled with chemicals, good chemicals that, when in balance, are doing amazing things for us. Every second, hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions going on all the time to keep us in balance. So we shouldn't be afraid of chemicals, but what we should be wary of are these synthetic flavorings, preservatives, and all kinds of things that are put in our food, especially because they most affect our children. And that's why I'm going to lead into introducing my next guest, Drina Burton, who's the author of a wonderful new cookbook, Plant Powered Families. And we're going to be talking a lot about the power of healthy food for children. She's been vegan for almost 20 years, writing best-selling cookbooks, four of them charting her journey as a plant-powered cook and at-home mother of three. Always passionate about creating nutritious recipes, she's an advocate of using the vegan basics to create healthy, delicious food for the whole family. Welcome to It's All About Food, Drina.
Thank you, Karen. It's good to chat with you again.
Thank you. You know, this book is really an important one, and I'm going to gush about it for the next half hour. I look at a lot of vegan cookbooks. I'm glad there are so many out there, but there aren't many that I get excited about. I'm excited about yours.
Oh, thank you.
You know, this, I love the expression plant powered, and right now I'm doing a 6-week online course with John Robbins and his son Ocean. It's called Plant Powered and Thriving.
Wonderful.
And the thing that we continually hear from so many of the people in this course, most of them are women and many of them are parents. They don't know what to feed their families. They don't know what to feed their children. They don't know how to introduce healthy foods into their family lives. And you've got all the answers in this book.
Well, at least some. Hopefully enough to help people, yeah.
And what really rings true is in the book, you can tell that you've made these recipes. You've fed your kids. You've really walked the walk.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is how my kids have been eating since they've been I call them vegans. And from the beginning, and they love, I say it all the time, they love their food, and it sounds really kind of corny, and people look at me and say, yeah, really, do they eat that? Yeah, they do. They really do love their food, and I always say that kids really, you know, diet is a learned thing, so kids really grow to love the foods that they know from an early age, and if they know a lot of processed foods and junk, it's really what their palate is going to become very accustomed to and want. If they are enjoying nourishing, nutrient-dense plant foods, then again, they're going to enjoy those and know when their body really wants something, like if they want something really water-rich like fruit, or if they need something a little bit more grounding and dense like nuts or grains or something like that. They can sense that. I get that from my kids.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is.
Well, you know, one of the things that's frustrating, I'm not a parent, but I've hung around with a lot of children. I was one once, too. And kids know, especially the really young ones, know when they don't want to eat anymore. And I've seen so many parents try and shove more food in their mouths.
Right. And the opposite happens when, like I say to parents sometimes when they're working with kids and they think they're picky, they really are. When they're very young and toddlers and at that young stage, it's not so much about picky. It's just that they're exploring, they're busy, they're moving. When they're hungry, they'll eat. They'll eat. They're hungry. And they'll also tell you, yeah, like you said, when they're done. I mean, you, sometimes you see kids and they're saying, they're doing, moving their head side to side. No, they're done.
Yeah.
They're still pushing the spoon in their mouth. It's just the way I think we've been brought up to try and overfeed in a way. But they know when they're done for sure.
Yeah, and when we move to a healthier place where we're plant-powered, we know when it's time to eat, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the body works when you let it work.
That's right.
Now, I know with cookbooks, people just, well, I don't know this for sure, but I think what people tend to do is thumb through it, look for something that looks nice, a picture or something that has an ingredient they're looking for. But I really recommend reading this from start to finish. And it starts being great from the introduction. So I wanted to touch on a few things that you mentioned, that it's not the vegan part of parenting that's difficult. It's the parenting part.
Yes, it is.
But that's profound, and you're just right on with that.
Well, you know, parents, I hear from parents all the time on my blog, by email, and I actually have a parenting group set up on Facebook now, which is really growing, and people are supporting each other. It's wonderful. But I get this all the time, like, how do you get your kids to eat vegan, or do you find it so hard? And really, when you're eating vegan for, once you make that switch and you're into it for a year or longer than a year, it becomes so part of your life that it's not difficult. It's just prioritizing healthy eating. So you find that time to prep food and you find that time to maybe batch up some soups or muffins or things on the weekend. We find ways to prioritize other things in our lives, and we just need to prioritize that important part of healthy eating for our families. And so it's all the other stuff with parenting that's difficult, what goes on at school and sports, politics, and all kinds of other things, drama, sibling dramas. The food part for me is the easy part.
Wow, that's good to hear. Now, you had your own personal issues with health before you became plant-powered, and I was surprised to read that you had issues with sore knees and gout. You were really young when that happened.
I was in my early 20s, and I felt terrible. My digestion was really sluggish and slow, and I just kind of thought, that's what happened after you ate. You just felt really awful. And I love dairy. I didn't eat a lot of red meat at the time, but I ate every other animal product that was available. And I really loved all things that were dairy, like cheese and ice creams and yogurt. And I thought they were so good for me, of course. And in university, I felt really uncomfortable. Like, my body just felt uncomfortable most of the time, and my joints felt stiff, my knees felt stiff. I had like that swollen part of my toe. Was I thought, what is going on? I'm 23. I feel like I'm 20 years older or 30 years older than I am. So how am I going to feel when I am 20 or 30 years older? And now I'm 44, and I actually feel better than I did when I was 23, apart from occasionally being worn out by my kids. But in terms of my energy level for, you know, day to day and my eating, like, my food energizes me. So it's completely different.
Well, I'm glad that you are plant powered now, because if you were experiencing those symptoms so young, I can't imagine if you continued where you would be today. Really, it would have been pretty bleak.
I think so too.
Yeah, so good for you. Now, the second two part, the last two parts of your book after the recipes are so important, where you're talking about children and mm-hmm. how to educate children, how to work with children in the kitchen, and then the last section is about having parties and socializing. Very important topics. And maybe we could touch on some of those things with children. So one of the things that you do is you talk to your children about why you eat the way you do.
All the time. I mean, it's like, we talk to our kids about so many other things in our lives. And as a parent, you realize that as they get older, all of these topics come up in their lives that we need to talk to them about, like bullying at school, peer pressure, things related to, you know, alcohol and sexuality and all of these things. And as a community, we find ways to talk to our children about that in school and at home, yet we never talk about food. Instead, at school, they're just bombarded with a lot of junk and at parties. And it's so, to me, it's really backwards. And with sports, we spend a lot of time investing time and money in sports for our kids, yet we're not fueling them with good nutrition. And so we've talked to our kids all along from an early age, and everything is very age appropriate. Of course, when they're really young, you talk to them at, you know, that age that they can understand, and they guide you with their questions. Just like anything, they'll ask for more information, and sometimes when it's too much, you know, by they're ready to sort of move on to the next topic. But even in terms of just simple things, like, it doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be really deep and scary, but even just something as simple as, what do you think's in dinner tonight? Like, what do you think went into the soup? And get them talking about ingredients or how you made it, or maybe we'll go to the market and find something new that they want to try. Just get them involved. Sometimes we feel like kids have to be really involved with the actual cooking process. And that can be stressful for moms when there's a lot going on and activities and there's little time to prepare a meal. So I encourage parents to get them involved in other ways, like pick out a recipe or talk about a new food we might pick up to try this week, or just talk about the food in general?
Well, I know that the biggest problem we have as humans, and it affects everything in life, is communication. And that's one-on-one with individuals, it's with groups, it's with cities, states, countries, and maybe sometime in the future with other planets. I hope we learn how to communicate well by that time. And all of our problems stem from a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. And these food issues with children, talking to them and not talking down to them, but talking with them and like you said, in ways that they can understand, make all the difference.
Absolutely.
I was talking to someone yesterday, and she was convinced that our big problem with food is that the schools, not only do they not serve healthy food, but they don't teach kids how to prepare food. And I'd like to see it everywhere. I'd like to see kids learning how to make food at home and in schools as well.
Me too, because it's a life skill. And, you know, we put our kids in lessons for other things, swimming and skating. And in school, they're learning the basics of reading and math and all those things. But they don't learn some of these necessary skills. And, the food culture in schools with hot lunches and just what happens with parties, it's often so processed, almost all the time. It's so processed and filled with sugar and colors and dairy as well. It's a little disappointing. It's when I first saw the scene at one of the school parties, like I went in during a lunch hour and saw what the kids were eating. It's a little disheartening. So much of it is processed and packaged and not even really resembling, you know, natural food. So there's a lot of work to do, but, kids are, you know, they really embrace it if you give them the chance. Like our school did bring in, this year they brought in some produce and distributed through the classes to the kids. And so the kids had chances to try, you know, cucumbers or apples and oranges. And I really saw that the kids were loving to come out with an apple and eating it. Like it's exciting for them, because sometimes at home, maybe the apple's always cut up, or maybe they don't try cucumber because their parents don't like it themselves. So they do get really excited when it becomes something they're learning and something they can touch, feel, try, that kind of thing. And some of them don't always have that opportunity to do so at home.
Back up a minute. You said sometimes kids won't like something because their parents don't like something.
That's right.
I know I've seen that so many times where you offer something to a children and the parent will scrunch up their nose and say, no, he won't like that. It's because they don't like it. And the kids read from their parents what they should be doing.
Totally. And modeling is really important. I mean, it's not enough to say eat your veggies when you're not eating them, or when you're sneaking back to get some chips out of the kitchen and telling your kid to eat the carrot sticks. You know, they watch us. They watch us really closely. And our eldest, she's 14 now. Our girls are 14, 10, and 6. And so our little one, she is not into the greens. We do green smoothies. She drinks those. But in terms of eating greens straight up, no way. She's not eating those. But she'll eat other things that are green, like zucchinis and asparagus. So, you know, you work with what you've got at the age and you build on it. But now my 14-year-old, I see how much she has grown with it. And so she loves salads, and she's always seen me eat steamed kale and lunch bowls and that kind of thing. And she asked me one day to try it, and I said, sure. And she loved it. So now whenever she's home for lunch, she says, Mom, will you do me some steamed kale for lunch? And I say, sure. You know, and I'm thinking, wow, you're 14. Like, I never knew what kale was when I was 14. But it's really a growth, and we need to kind of keep that in mind as parents and not just get frustrated and throw our hands up when they're 8 or 9 and not eating it, but just keep presenting it and keep at it and make it part of your life, because then it becomes part of theirs.
Make it a part of your life. Yes, I'm underlining that one. I guess I'm going to look forward to one of your future books, which is Feeding Teenagers.
I know, just entered the teenage years, so we shall see how that goes.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're getting a good beginning, so I think it'll be a very positive experience.
So far, it is. And she loves just about everything. There's not too much that our 14-year-old will not eat. And she sees her friends. They eat all the processed stuff. She's not even interested in eating it. So it's not like she doesn't want to have fries if we go out to a restaurant or something. Sure, and I let them, you know, yeah, have some fries. But when she sees her classmates eating all of these, like, processed pastries and chips and things at school, she doesn't ask for them. She just eats her lunch and she enjoys it. And then she eats, they have really good appetites too. Like they really eat well. So far so good.
That's good. Now when they were younger or the younger ones, they weren't confused or unhappy that their food didn't look like the other kids in school.
You know, there'd be times when they were little, like situations come up with parties where it's confusing, right? So I always talk to the teacher ahead of time and let them know what our diet is. And for parties, I'll always talk to the host and say, hey, you know, this is how we eat. I will bring the vegan equivalent of whatever you're serving at the party. It's almost always pizza or hot dogs. And I'll bring a cupcake, or sometimes I bring a little frozen ice cream treat. And yeah, because kids love those, and usually the other kids at the party want.
Right.
Yeah. And so I always prepare that in advance. But there have been times at school parties where they eat something that they think they could, that they think is vegan, or someone says, oh, you can have that. And, you know, kids that are really young, they believe what the adult is saying. So, and then they'll sometimes come home and tell me they ate it, or oftentimes they don't feel very good, and then I know why. We have the discussion, but it's all okay because it's opening up more discussion and helping them learn and sort of make that distinction for themselves as they get older. But my littlest has been saying a lot. She comes home every about once a week. She says to me, "Mommy, you know," and she'll give me a name. So and so eats vegan food, and she's talking about someone in her class, and I always say to her, "Yeah, everybody eats some vegan food, hon, because look at all the foods we eat that are vegan. I mean, everybody eats, most people eat bananas and potatoes and rice and beans and corn. And I list off foods and I say, they're all vegan. So yeah, they're eating vegan food. We just happen to eat everything vegan." And that kind of helps, you know, her. And then I actually said that at a talk recently, and one of the parents said to me, "That actually makes a lot of sense. Like, it's weird." And I said, "No, it's actually really natural and wholesome. And it's the most, you know, unprocessed and natural food." So it helps frame it sometimes for, well, big kids too.
I was at a little gathering last week, and before we got there, the host said, "I'm sorry, but there won't be any vegan food there." And, you know, we rolled our eyes a little bit. And then when we got there, there was a whole spread of fruits and veggies, and it was all clean. And plus, they went out of their way and got a vegan cheesecake from Whole Foods for us. So there's plenty of vegan food. Wow. But it's just funny that people don't realize how many foods they eat actually are plants.
Right.
Because nobody knows what they're eating.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's a little bit more in our favor, unfortunately, because of all the allergies that are going on today, and schools have to be really vigilant with children that have celiac disease or peanut allergies or nut allergies and on and on and on. So more teachers and schools are aware of what's in food.
Yes, that actually does work to our favor, because when I've always talked to the teachers, and I've had some teachers who've been really supportive and have gone out of their way to do a vegan treat for the girls, like if it's a Halloween, there's always treats handed out every occasion of the year. So some teachers are really quite interested and cooperative, and but they really do need to be aware. And so it does work to our favor in that regard. The only thing that can be tricky for parents is the nut-free policy, because it's usually that schools now are not just peanut-free, but totally nut-free. So often parents get really nervous about that when their kids start wondering, what can I put in my kid's lunch? Because everything has to be nut-free and they're eating almond butter at home, and et cetera, et cetera. So I talk about that a lot in the book and give people tips on how to pack lunches that are nut-free. And I try to do a lot of nut-free adaptations with my recipes as well, because it is pretty important. I have not had a year yet with my girls that I could send nuts to school.
Hmm. Now, I've been doing some of what you did in the book with some of your recipes, offering some nut-free variations, and I'm kind of delighted what I'm discovering. So I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. Every time I eliminate foods from my diet, I find that the repertoire expands.
That's very true.
And it's happened when I eliminated meat and dairy. For a while, I went all raw. Then I wanted to discover gluten-free foods. And now I'm working more towards nut-free foods, even though I don't have any of these problems. But I like to play around and discover how to do things. And it's amazing what you can do with seeds.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And they're cheaper.
Yeah, and they're very high in most of them are very high in protein and calcium, and like they're very nutrient dense. So, and they're a little, like you say, they're a bit underutilized, really. I found nuts and beans often, or seeds and beans are often underutilized. And they, you can really, hemp seeds, pumpkin seeds, and chia seeds, you can do a lot with them. I actually had a recipe tester, and we've kind of connected outside of that and become friends. One of her sons is, they eat vegan, and he's quite allergic to a number of things, a number of legumes and also nuts. And she modifies almost all of my recipes using hemp seeds and finds it works. You know, most of the times it works very, very well.
Warning, though, you cannot legally eat hemp seeds in Australia.
That's true. It's crazy.
Crazy. I just discovered that recently, and that's just crazy.
Yeah.
but it is wonderful to know. And maybe one day we'll grow hemp seeds in the United States and they won't be as expensive as they are because they are so easy to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so nutritious. Well, we just have like a few minutes left. I wanted to highlight some of the recipes that I thought were, that I think people would really like a lot. Things that kind of work well in my life. Baked tofu. I'm glad you included that recipe. It's so easy to make. And I find the baked tofu in the stores, although it might help people get to know baked tofu, they tend to be too salty for me.
I agree. It doesn't always have a lot of flavor as much as it just has salt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the flavor doesn't always absorb into the tofu. This technique, and it's the easiest thing in the world, and that's why I put the recipe in there, because I do it often for the girls for their lunches. It's so easy, and all the flavors just get right in there.
Yeah, it's great on a sandwich, great in a salad, great just nibbling on like cheese.
Right.
I'm nuts over it. And then you have a white bean guacamole recipe.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. It's very thick, too. I mean, guacamole is rich and delicious, but when you add the beans, it actually makes it, it might sound a little weird, but a little cheesy. Like, it makes it very thick and luscious and really satisfying.
And as you mentioned before, beans and seeds tend to be underutilized. We're doing all we can to up the image of these important foods, and we're continually learning how important beans are. I love this white bean guacamole. I'm going to make it. And then I love what's happening with the nut and seed-based cheeses. You have a mild cheesy dip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did it because in my last book, I had a what I called Veg Vita dip. It was my spin on the Velveeta dip that we used to eat years ago and stir in the salsa. But it had cashews as the base. So I really wanted to come up with something that tasted really good using seeds instead. And so that's my version.
Yeah, well, what's great about it is, okay, there are tons of different cow and sheep and goat-based cheeses out there, lots of variety. And now we're creating all kinds of cheesy sauces and even harder cheeses that are made from a variety of nuts and flavorings. And we have a wide variety that are continuing to grow.
Exactly.
Yay! Yeah. the last one I wanted to mention was your berry jam. What a beautiful picture. So bright and colorful.
Thanks. I just made a batch of that yesterday, actually. I had picked up some organic strawberries on special, and our eldest just loves that jam. And she went wild when she came home and I had made up a batch and the whole house smelled just amazing. But it's great because there's no sugar added. It's just the fruits and I add chopped dates, which adds that extra level of sweetness, but it's completely, you know, a lot of people don't want sugar of any form or any sweetener put in. So that adds that very natural sweetness. And then the chia seeds thicken it. And it's a beautiful, easy recipe.
And it's less expensive than if you buy jam already jarred in the store.
And the flavor is completely different too.
It is. It's so much better. I like to make jams out of dried fruit. I just boil them up with water and then blend them. It's the easiest thing. But I'm going to try this berry jam very soon.
Oh, I hope you do.
Drina, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I can't believe the half hour is gone, but it is. And, I'm going to be telling a lot of people about your wonderful Plant Powered Families book.
Thanks so much, Karen. It was a nice talk. Okay, have a good day.
Thank you, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's take a little break, shall we? And then we're going to be back and talking about good karma. Hello, everybody. We're back. And it's time for the second part of It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks so much for joining me. I wanted to say hello because I've been gone for 2 weeks and it's so good to be back. As I mentioned before, I'm in California for the month and in some ways that impacts how I've been eating. So we're not really cooking because we're in this little pool house cottage, which is absolutely delightful. I'm eating a lot of rolled oats with fresh fruit, a little soy milk, big salads. And then we go to restaurants. And I'm not a big restaurant eater because not only because it costs money, but I like to make my own food and I like the way I make it. I find it's healthier with less salt, sugar, and fat. But I am enjoying some of my favorites in the South Bay Area, like the Veggie Grill, Tofu Kamche, Vegetarian House. These are some of my favorites. I love these big pho noodle soups. How do you say pronounce pho, P-H-O, pho, whatever it is. I love those big noodle soups. And this morning on my oatmeal, I had a treat. We put mango in the oats today, and I love mango, but I'm always conflicted. You know, every food has a story, and mango has its story. You know what I think of when I eat mangoes? I think of a number of things. One of the things I think about is the nuclear technology, because you may have remembered or not that I think it was back almost 2006, so what's that, 9 years ago, George Bush opened the U.S. market to the Indian Alfonso mango, kind of as a bonus for India accepting U.S. nuclear technology and policy. So mangoes, nuclear technology, connect the dots. I kind of get a little disappointed when I think about that. And then, of course, all the fruit that we import into this country has to get a little zapped, so the mangoes are irradiated. And I don't know. I prefer to buy local fruits that are born, that are grown in my area or at least in the United States and organic. But I do love mangoes. And if I'm not in Costa Rica, when the mangoes are ripe and dripping from the trees, occasionally I'll indulge in an organic mango. And so we got some. And they were on my oatmeal today. And that's my mango story. I hope there was some good karma in those mangoes, and that's what we're going to be talking about next with my next guest, Victoria Moran, who's the author of a new book, The Good Karma Diet, Eat Gently, Feel Amazing, Age in Slow Motion. She's the author of 12 books, including Main Street Vegan, the best-selling Creating a Charmed Life, and the plant-based weight loss classic, The Love-Powered Diet, Eating for Freedom, Health, and Joy. She has appeared twice on Oprah, and she's one of the celebrity coaches for the PCRM 21-Day Vegan Kickstart. We've talked a lot about that on our show. She's a certified holistic health counselor and holds the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies eCornell Certificate in Plant-Based Nutrition. Hello, Victoria.
Hey, Karen. How are you out there in California? Lucky you.
Oh, my God. It is, We go out here a couple times a year because my partner Gary's from San Jose, but this has been the best trip ever. We're here for a month, and we're staying in this beautiful little pool house right by a pool, and I'm swimming and getting my vitamin D, and I'm feeling very, very fortunate.
It sounds heavenly.
And I'm feeling like I must have done something right, like my karma is pretty good.
Yeah, well, see, there's proof.
I'm not complaining one moment, and I wasn't complaining about the mangoes. I love mangoes, but every food has its story.
That's an amazing story about mangoes for nuclear technology. My goodness gracious. I have a mango story. It's not nearly as political, but a really long time ago, when I got into this world of being vegan, et cetera, probably about the time that you did, it was a very different world, much smaller. And I really came in through the American Vegan Society. It was founded in 1960. I didn't get into it that early, by Jay Dinshaw. And he was also a practitioner of natural hygiene, which was a kind of philosophy of being really healthy, but kind of Spartan and aesthetic. And I remember they used to have a speaker. His name was Jack Dunn-Trop. And he would go to their conventions every summer and talk about the sensuality of mangoes and how you should always peel them in the shower with someone that you love. So every time I eat a mango, I always think, are there any children watching? I should probably keep them away.
I am now re-scripting my thoughts about mangoes in a better way.
They're R-rated for ravishing, raw, and give me another one.
Yeah.
Really good.
Well, it's always really exciting when I'm in, I don't know what the season is, but I visit Costa Rica a lot. And when the mangoes are ripe, and like I said before, they're literally dropping from the trees. And I don't know why the locals really aren't going nuts or eating them. But, you know, I'm like bathing in them, showering in them.
Well, I think it's the idea that anything that's too close or too available loses its value. I mean, I think of some of the museums in New York City that are maybe 15 minutes from where I sit that I have yet to visit after 15 years, and yet people come from far away and have those very museums on their list for the first day. So I guess museums and mangoes have something in common too.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I'm going to ask you, have you been to the Neue Gallery in Manhattan?
No. What is that? Where is that? Why should I go?
It's my favorite. And recently, there are some museums in Manhattan that are free on certain days. And that's when I like to go to them. Not that I don't want to support them, but it's just easier on my budget. But Friday nights, the first of the month, after 6 p.m., the Neue Gallery, it's on the Upper East Side around 86th Street and 5th Avenue. They're open for free, and they're not usually open in the evening. So this is really nice, and there's like a line that wraps around the block to get in. So the Neue Gallery is owned by Ron Lauder, the philanthropist who's the son of Estee Lauder. And I learned about it first when I was going through my romp with advanced ovarian cancer back in 2006. And you can read about it on my personal website, KarenHartGlass.com, my cancer story. But I had these dreams with this Gustav Klimt painting in it, the adult Blockbauer. And there actually was this hidden message related to my treatment, if you want to believe it. I do. And And there's a new
movie. I just heard it, and I believe it.
There's a new movie out called Woman in Gold with Helen Mirren, which is about the Adele Blockbauer and the terrible story of the Nazis stealing it and not wanting to give it back. And then finally giving it back to the family. Ron Lauder purchased it for $137 million back in 2006, and it now rests proudly in the Neue Gallery.
Whoa.
And the Neue Gallery features a German, what's it called? I always mix it up with German Impressionist paintings, and there recently was this Egon Schiele exhibit. I love this stuff, and it's a small little gallery, so you don't get overwhelmed. And I recommend it to everyone, whether you're a tourist
wow.
or not.
Well, you know, this just shows, Karen, that it's not all about food, but we feed ourselves with all these other things. So I'm going to share with you my favorite little gallery in New York City, and that is the Nicholas Roerich Museum. Have you run into that one?
No!
It's on the Upper West Side. I learned about Roerich when I was a wee lass of 19 and was living and working at the headquarters of the Theosophical Society near Chicago. I actually had run away to work there because I had gained a lot of weight and I was too embarrassed to stay home. So I thought if I ran off to this place where everybody was vegetarian and spiritual, I would lose lots of weight and would go home all slim and trim. Well, that didn't happen. I gained another 50 pounds, but that's the backstory. I learned about Roerich because he was a highly spiritual painter in Russia at the time of the revolution. And because his family had means and they were considered the bad people by the Bolsheviks, they escaped. And he ended up in the high Himalayas, somewhere in the Nepal, Tibet, Bhutan kind of region. And he could paint colors and scenes that were just so delicious, so bright and sparkly. And yet there was so little available in terms of pigments. And many of his works, when you go to the museum, some of his earlier works will say on canvas, but a lot of them, once he got to the Himalayas, are on cardboard. Because that...
Okay, so I guess we lost Victoria, unfortunately. Are you back?
I'm back.
Oh,
I never
good.
Went anywhere on purpose.
I know, but you know, I love the cyberspace and technology, but you know, you can't depend on everything or anything, and so we lost you for a moment, but you're back.
That's all right. I was just giving the website.
You were talking about how he painted on cardboard.
Yeah, he painted on cardboard because that was all he could get in the far-off Himalayas in 1918 and so forth. So Roerich.org, Roerich.org, tells about his work. Quite fascinating.
No, I can't wait. I love art almost as much as I love food. And food is art, or it should be.
And as should life.
I think...
That's really the key. And when people talk about, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I want to change my diet. I don't know if I want to start eating hippie food. Well, number one, it's not hippie food. Hippies did not eat like we eat. They just didn't want to work. So they ate a lot of brown rice. But beyond that, if you really consider this change in what you eat as another artful part of life, then it makes it such an adventure and such a joy. And sometimes people will say to me, but don't you miss? And then they'll name some food or other. And no, I mean, the truth is I really, really don't. And if there's some flavor or some texture that I do miss these days, you can just find all that stuff. I was at a veg fest this weekend in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and one of the vendors had some kind of fish fillets, and I must say that was a flavor and a texture that I do remember enjoying, and I had a couple of bites of that on a toothpick, and it's just like, well, what do you know? all this and fish fillets too, but no fish, of course.
Yeah, well, that I wanted to ask you a question or just mention or just applaud you for how you're always everywhere. So I don't go to all of the veg events in New York, but the ones that I go to, you're always there. So I'm thinking statistically, you must be at all of them because it wouldn't work coincidentally that you just happen to be at the ones that I'm at. And then I look at your Facebook page and you're always somewhere. And it's not just in New York, it's all over the place. And then you're sponsoring your Main Street Vegan Academy sponsors. You gave a lovely donation to my nonprofit organization for our recent fundraiser. You're ever present every day, so supportive. Thank you. And well, how do you do it?
That is really kind to say, because, you know, I don't like going out after dark. I think it's this ancient kind of prehistoric thing that humans have, some more than others, that once it gets to be dark, especially in the wintertime, you're just not supposed to go out. It just seems to go against everything that's in me. So sometimes it's really kind of a stretch. There's an event tonight. Rich Roll and his lovely wife, Julie Piott, are having a book party for their wonderful new cookbook. And so many people wanted to go that they changed the venue, and they've made it the Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn because they needed a bigger space. That's a bookstore in Dumbo. But it's really far from the train. And I did something at the gym yesterday which has shown me two muscles that I didn't know that I had. But they're muscles that are very important for walking. And every step is just like, oh, my God, how could I have lived this long and not known these muscles were there? So until you said what you said, I was thinking, I can't go all the way to Dumbo tonight. But, you know, when Karen Hartglass is in your life saying, gosh, you're everywhere, you can't very well not go to something.
That's right.
It's all meant to be.
Well, I'm sorry that you're suffering a little. That's not, I don't think you deserve that, and I don't think that's your karma.
Oh, that's so kind. But, you know, it's happy suffering. It's like, you know, injury suffering from if you're working out and you do something really wrong, that's unfortunate. But the, oh my gosh, new muscles, that's the kind of, yeah, something good's happening. So I can put up with it.
What did you do to discover these muscles? Where are they?
You know, I'm actually, these muscles are in the very front of my upper thighs. So if you would follow it all the way up where I think it no longer goes because it doesn't hurt that high, it's right at the pelvic bones. Mm. And it's both legs. And I think what I was doing was some sort of step-up thing. I've actually found this interesting new gym, which is super cheap, because I belonged to a gym that was very nice, and I thought, if I belong to this nice gym and I pay a lot of money for it, then I will be more likely to go. But, of course, I wasn't.
Well, that's because you're always going all the other VegFest.
Well, that's it. I work out at VegFest. But, no, I discovered aerial yoga, which is just the most fun ever. If you liked monkey bars as a kid, you love aerial yoga. And I did, and I do. So I thought, I don't want to pay the retainer to the big gym and to aerial yoga. So I got rid of the fancy gym, and I joined this just kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, gym for people who don't want to spend any money on a gym. But the trainers are sensational, and they're very reasonably priced too. So I've been working out with this lovely, charming trainer who does not let me get by with anything. You know, sometimes I kind of want to look at him and say, I'm old enough to be your mother. And I know he would say, yeah. Do it again. You know, give me another 20. So I don't know. It was something he told me to do that has me feeling it.
Okay. Well, it'll feel better soon and you'll be all the better for it.
That's right. I'll be hanging upside down again tomorrow.
Okay, so you've written another book. I don't know how you do this, but you do. And it's a very happy book.
Thank you for sensing that, because that's exactly what I was aiming for. Because I wrote Main Street Vegan back in 2012, and that's a very friendly book, very wide open. Y'all come, everybody be vegan. Let's make it really easy. Just come on in, and we'll be nice, and you'll have fun, and life is good. But then I heard from some people saying, okay, I'm in. Now what do I do to really ace the health aspects of this thing? And I thought, why do people eat food that they themselves would call junk food, that they themselves know isn't good, or in quantities that they themselves are saying, I really shouldn't do this, because they think somehow it'll make them happy. And then why do at least some people follow that up with some real punitive thing? They're going to go on some sort of diet or some kind of cleanse, and they're going to tough it out because they think that after that they'll feel happy and they'll feel good about themselves. And I thought, well, why not just skip the middle diet and go straight to happy? And what I've observed over many decades is that being vegan makes people happy because you put good out into the world and you can't help but get that back. And then the people that take it up a notch and really make a point of eating fresh, colorful, natural foods for the most part, instead of the more processed and treat kind of foods, although certainly, you know, a few of those every now and then aren't going to hurt you. But generally speaking, the really, really great healing kinds of foods, then they get good karma with physical health. So why not put those together and just have the best life can offer?
Why not? Why not? It's just so simple and mind-boggling to me and probably you and so many others that so many people don't get it.
I think it's because it's against the culture.
Yes.
This is not how I was raised. This is not how my mother fed me. The teachers didn't tell me this. The clergy didn't tell me this. There must be something wrong with it. But you know what's really interesting, Karen, is we've been so brainwashed, I believe, by food producers, pharmaceutical companies, everybody who can afford television commercials, that the things that we think are good and normal and right aren't necessarily that.
You know, I was just talking at the beginning of the program at 4 o'clock about this new FDA release saying that they're going to ban trans fats, and it's going to take about 3 years to manufacture foods. And this is really great news, but this food came into our food supply as Crisco in 1911. It's been here for more than 100 years. We can't rely on the government to tell us anything or do anything right. We have to rely on ourselves. And there's so much stuff in our food system that is just not healthy.
Right. And some people get really kind of on their high horses about the many vegan processed foods that are available, that you can find a doppelganger for any kind of food that you once loved. But I'm not quite like that about those foods. I don't eat very many of them at all because I really have come to the point where I actually prefer great big salads and steamed vegetables and wonderful beans and that kind of thing. But I'm so glad that they're there, because if the whole world went junk food vegan tomorrow, I don't know how much health would improve. Maybe it wouldn't improve at all. But global warming would stop dead in its tracks, and there would be so much less suffering on this planet. We would probably end up with peace on Earth and all kinds of other wonderful things. So let's just come in. And let's just know that if we really, really, really need a marshmallow, those exist these days. But if we really, really care about ourselves, it's going to be fewer marshmallows, more broccoli. Life is good.
Life is good. Life is good. And, you know, we just have a few more minutes left. I can't believe the time has flown. I wanted to talk, you mentioned earlier, I don't know if you use the word deprivation, but this is not a diet of deprivation. You are nuts about your food. I am nuts about our food. And there are so many stories about people moving from fat and sick and whatever and finding this place of joy and good karma.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is total joy. It's not deprivational joy. It's not like watch me over here in my box not doing anything fun. Lots of fun, lots of flavors, and lots of stories. One of the fun things in the Good Karma Diet is 17 stories from people who believe that changing what they ate gave them good karma in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. Victoria, I think we need to go. I'm hearing little music cues in the background.
I hear music too. Art and music on this show.
Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I love you and your books. Thank you for all that you're doing to create good karma on this planet.
Back at you, Karen. Enjoy your time out west.
Okay, thank you. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Send me comments at info@realmeals.org and visit me and my blog, What Vegans Eat, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Have a delicious week.